Okay, this is joint work with people at the University of Wageningen in the Netherlands and some of my old colleagues at Rothamsted. And the reason you've got me talking twice is because I couldn't persuade any of the Dutch to come to Pittsburgh in November. This year they've been to Cairns, they've been to somewhere in Africa, they've been to Scotland twice. And I have to say, having seen Pittsburgh, I think they should have come here too, but they weren't willing to do that. So this is, as I've said, some joint work. I've played probably one of the smaller parts in this, in the sense that it's been my job to referee and edit the procedures that they've been writing to do this work. So that means I hope I'm aware of what they're doing, but I certainly don't know all the underlying maths. So for some of that, if you ask difficult questions, I shall duck. So. What we're looking at is how to use statistics and particularly mixed models effectively in plant breeding. And you know, the idea is that we want to predict phenotypic expression, which to me means things like yields, physical variables that we measure, for multiple traits, taking account of the environment in which we're growing things, and using molecular marker information, genomic information, environmental inputs, and taking account of experiments that involve various types of crosses. So the issues that we have to confront are that the differences between genotypes will depend upon the environment, and that's clearly what we're trying to capture in modern plant breeding. We're wanting to produce varieties that are appropriate for particular environments. So we can have G by E interactions on the mean, which essentially means that if you did a plot like the one that Kathy just showed, you'll have non-parallel responses with interesting things happening in, you know, particular environments that we want to study. From a statistical perspective, though, we also need to get a handle on how to model the G by E interaction in terms of the variances and the covariances. In other words, we may have different genetic correlations as we move from environment to environment. And we want to find a structure that will take account of this so that we can model the mean part of the response in a meaningful and reliable way. So, again, I'm taking the remit that was in the session that we're allowed to suggest software, and I'm talking therefore about the work that my colleagues have done putting this into GenStat. So let me just go the way down and hope I don't get to the bottom. So as a result, in the latest version, we have a suite of menus based upon procedures. Procedures is our word for algorithms that people write using GenStat as a language. So it's the kind of thing that people do with functions in R, but GenStat, it's been available since 1968, so possibly we gave some of the ideas to the R community through the S+ community. So we have these menus written by my colleagues at VSN, and the procedures developed by the Dutch in collaboration with my ex-colleagues at Rothamsted. So the whole thing is put together in such a way that we hope we can guide non-statisticians through to do these analyses. So there's the concept of a workbook which builds up the results that we're constructing as we do the analysis. And clearly we need to import the data. If we're doing a multi-environment trial, then we have the concept that what you'll do is do the separate environment analyses first and extract from those the means, having taken account of spatial correlations in the way that I whistled through in the first talk, or using the kind of things that Kathy was talking about. Indeed, if we got, perhaps we might have non-normal data. So we also allow various plots and summary statistics, which you'll see. But then we get down to the interesting part, which is, as I've said, we need to find out how to model the variance covariances of the G by E interaction, which involves doing a linear mixed models analysis, in other words, REML. Then we need to get the marker data in, and we need to calculate the potential genetic predictors. And then finally, we can do our scan to look for QTL effects. So, the example I've got is by colleagues at Wageningen, Martin Boer, Fred van Ewijk, with people also at Pioneer. So, it was looking at a multi-environment trial of maize, and you can see it's in Mexico, and we've got 8 different environments involving different water regimes, in other words, drought versus non-drought stressed environments, different nitrogen levels, and also 3 different years. And I guess Kathy's comment about it taking a while to analyse things, you'll notice the data goes back to 1996. I don't think it took them 12 years to analyse it. I think they just found better ways of doing it as the time progressed. But this is a paper that, as I said, was in Genetics in 2007. And you know, we thank people at CIMMYT for the use of that data. So data files, well, we've got the phenotypic data, which involves already having done the summarised analyses in the individual sites, and then we have some MapQTL data that's containing the genetic information, and this is the part I don't understand, I have to say. I'm a statistician, not a geneticist, but so I'm using the menus in as blind a way as any biologist at this point. Okay, so what you would see if you were running GenStat is that we have an option on the stats menu, on the menu bar, that contains a number of possibilities that we'll run through in order to do the analysis, starting with the simple and obvious thing of loading the phenotypic data. And you can see we open the file, and then we can identify the trait that we want to analyze, also the genotype factor and the environment factor in that data file, and then we're ready to go. So if you're going to follow David's approach and believe that graphs are important, then yes, you should do some summary statistics and look at some graphs, and if I press the right button, you'll see them. So things like histograms and box plots are key. And for between environments, scatterplot matrices, we also have the whole panoply of GGE biplots within GenStat if you want to use those techniques, you know, from the book by Huang and his colleague up in Canada. Which I won't show you, that would take more than the half an hour that we have available. But they contain some very nice ways of looking at the ordinary principal component biplots that allow you to better assess, you know, genotype by environment information. But as I say, I won't be looking at that today. Okay, so if we get into the part that interests the statisticians, then clearly, as I've said, the first thing we need to do is to get an appropriate variance model to model the G by E interaction, which at this point will contain, you know, genotypic terms, because we've not yet started modeling the molecular markers, plus an interaction. And the sort of models that we would use are the same things that we might use in a spatial field trial. So I think some of these have been mentioned already. Compound symmetry, I know, was mentioned just now. Heterogeneous compound symmetry, meaning that you've got compound symmetry and also different variances at the different sites. Ranging down to the ones that we find, I think, are more useful for this kind of data, factor analytic model involves fitting a multiplicative model involving genotype and environment, plus also some variances. If it's FA1, we've just got a single multiplicative term. If it's FA2, we have 2 multiplicative terms. Through to the full unstructured model that fits a different covariance for every off-diagonal element and a different variance all the way down. That's the one we're hoping not to have to use, of course, because it's hardly summarising anything. Okay, so again, it's one of these things, as in, you know, much of use of menu-based packages, that takes longer to explain than actually to do. To do it, you open an appropriate menu, set up the various factors for genotype and environment, your trait, select the kind of the models that you want to look at, and then decide how you're going to assess them, with the choice being either Akaiki or Schwartz, which is the original term for Bayesian information coefficients. So say we prefer Schwartz, which, as I said on Sunday, maybe because I have space balls in the back of my mind, but it also you know, recognises the person who originally came up with the coefficient. So if I do this, GenStat will run through all the various possibilities that I've selected, you can see, and tabulate the various ways of assessing them. We also include the deviance, -2 times the log likelihood, but you can't use that for making most of the comparisons here, because you need to have one model as being a generalization of the other. So it's a kind of rule of thumb, but what we would recommend is you use either Akaiki or Schwartz. Usually I think my Dutch colleagues prefer Schwartz, but you can see, I think you'd be unlikely to find many occasions when they give different answers. That's not to say they won't, but in this case they're giving the same answer, which is nicely reassuring. And the answer they're giving is the one that I would have expected right from the start, that Factor Analytic would be the best model. As we say here, the yellow comments are Dutch ones, by the way. They should be orange, perhaps, in terms of the Netherlands, but the yellow ones are mainly the Dutch ones. So it allows for, as said, heterogeneity of variance within the environments, and also heterogeneity of the covariance by using this multiplicative model that I just mentioned. So the nice thing about it is it's a parsimonious model, parsimonious being statisticians speak for involving fewer degrees of freedom than we would have had if we'd fitted the complete unstructured model, which would have had, if I've got my calculations right, something like 36 parameters. We're down to 16, and this gives us, I think, well, you mustn't overfit. If you overfit, then you tend to get predictions that are not as good as if you do, are at least summarizing the signal from the model and eliminating the noise. So a nice parsimonious model, but selected for us automatically. The person using this doesn't need to know the underlying mathematics, they just need to know that these are the kind of variance-covariance models that might be useful and sensible. So this is showing, you know, the diagonal gives the variance, and you can see if you've got good eyesight that the variances are coming out different for the different environments, as you might expect given this mixture of drought-stressed and non-stressed environments, and also the various covariances under there. Okay, so now we're ready, I think, to do the part that I don't understand, which is to get together the potential QTLs. So we load two map QTL files, the lock file and the map file. There's a menu that comes up that allows us just to check that no one has made a mistake in the data to get different labels in the two data sets. So you can just check that with a quick menu and then check or click the box that says generate labels, and we're ready to go. So again, I think graphs are useful here. You might want to have a look and see genetic map to see where the markers are on the chromosomes. So straightforward thing to do. Notice what's happening here is that the menu is being populated mainly for me automatically because of this workbook that's in the background. Now, if I was running this live, I could open the workbook and you could see as we progress through the analysis, it's got a tree structure that shows the various variables being constructed as we go along. So here we are, here's a, not sure which way I've gone, here we go. These are the markers within the chromosomes or linkage groups, as my friend Fred van Ewijk at Biometris would rather call them. So you can see where the markers are on the chromosomes. And the other thing you can also do is display the marker scores in a shade plot. So what I've got here are all of the genotypes in little rows, and the chromosomes are running in the columns, and the colours here are representing the types of each particular genotype. So again, this will be interesting, I think, for the biologist. We can also do one that shows where the missing information is, which on that slide is black. It's not easy to see the black with all the other colours, but if you do look at that, you'll see that they were more interested in doing, you know, half the data thoroughly than the other half, but I guess that's a phenomenon that statisticians recognize as well. Okay, so next thing is to calculate the genetic predictors, which I'm delighted to say is a little black box that will just happen for me. One thing I do need to do is to give the maximum step along the genome. I can set that to be very large if I want them calculated only at the markers, or I can move it down to smaller amounts, but this just ensures that we don't calculate the predictors too close to each other. And we also won't calculate them very close to a marker because you'll get a lack of identifiability. So as it said when I was going through, these are the covariates that are going to be involved in the analysis, the next model analysis that we use to identify the QTLs. So we're now ready to do the scan. And what this essentially does, I mean, notice that we have to tell the menu, or the menu I think, is remembering what the variance-covariance model was, and then we've got the predictors that have been formed. And what it's going to do is to repeatedly fit the mixed model for each of those potential covariates in turn. And at the first stage, it will look to see which ones seem to be giving us a signal. This is the maths. So this is what we're actually doing. You can see we've got the covariables that we're fitting here. We can also include additional ones that we already know about to remove some noise. And we've got the G by E variance model that we've already defined, and we've got the environment effects here. So this is what we're doing. We're going to do it for each of these in turn to see which ones seem to have a signal. Again, we can control how far apart, once having found a signal, you're going to look for the next signal, to try and avoid getting things that are essentially measuring the same thing. So we're doing that in centimorgans. First step, click on initial scan, and that's using simple interval mapping, by which I understand that means that we just look at these one at a time. And you can see this is the signal that we're getting as we go through the linkage groups or chromosomes. We've got a threshold here. The plot here is of minus log 10 of p, and the ones that are above the threshold we're selecting as potential QTLs. Taking account of the minimum spacing that I talked about. If I want, I can now do the button scan with cofactors now becomes ungrayed, and I can now do another scan which uses the ones I've detected so far as covariates in order to reduce the variation, and that means that I've got a more precise way of identifying the smaller potential QTLs. So we go through and we can use the saved ones that we've got. We could also force some particular ones in if perhaps you'd found those as QTLs in a previous study. So if we do this, you can see we've got a clearer signal. The things are coming out with more marked peaks. That's the plot with the peaks and a similar heat plot underneath. So we detect more QTLs as candidates. And now, of course, let's just go through, and put the model down. The next stage is to look and see if we need all of them. So we've brought them in one at a time. Now we need to do a backward selection to see whether we actually need all of those in the model. So, okay, we do a backward selection, and we're also now at this point looking for QTL by environment interactions. So we're looking to see, which of these potential genetic predictors is relevant for, say, the drought environments versus the ones where you don't have the drought stress. So moving towards, I guess, the holy grail of the breeder, being able to identify how to breed for specific environments. Relatively straightforward menu to do this, which I've lost. So you're giving the significance level, you're running a backward selection, and you're deciding what to print as you go along. So this is what the output looks like. You can see that in the backward selection there are various QTLs that we have removed in the context of all the ones that we've got as potential ones. And then we've got the ones that are retained, and some of them, you can see this column here with ones and zeros, some of them have an interaction with environment, and some of them don't. So reaching the end of the analysis process, this is what the output looks like. We've got our tests for fixed effects with Wald tests and the F-statistics too, which you can use just to verify, if you like, that the algorithm has done what you wanted. And then, I guess the interesting thing in statistics, we try to persuade people to use significance tests only as a screen. It's the size of the effects that they should be interested in. So we have the estimates, we have the standard errors, and I'll just focus on the sort of information perhaps that this is telling us. So we have some QTLs with a large dependency on the environment. You can see these are the interaction effects, and you've got a crossover. You've got, this one is positive in some environments and negative in another. And this is giving, I think, some very useful information to the breeder. Or you've got Likewise, you've got interactions where it's just that some seem to have a very low effect. Now, they're not really doing anything in some environments and not in others. So some are, you know, potentially harmful in one environment but beneficial in another. Others are not relevant in one of the environments. Okay, so that's the end point, and that was really all I wanted to show you. If I could run it on the computer, it would be finishing roundabout now. So the conclusion is that mixed models have really got a lot to contribute, I think, when it comes to QTL mapping. The standard techniques of regression analysis looking for QTLs really aren't relevant if you've got multi-environment trials, because you've got no additional random effects in there for the environments, and potentially you can model those in a more interesting way. So mixed models, I think, are key to this, and it is built upon the standard REML techniques that we've been using in the past for spatial analysis or for repeated measurements, but with the extra superstructure of taking care of the genetic aspects of the thing and guiding people through the analysis process in a reasonably straightforward way. So, I mean, I can finish with a plug for the software if people are interested, but otherwise I think it's, to get over the idea that statistics is very relevant to this kind of work, and to encourage you to use a statistics package, even if it's not our one, rather than using the black box things that come with the, sequencing equipment. So, statistics really must be involved here if you want to get proper insights, and this is one way of doing it. The question is, do we need replicates in order to model the G by E? I think the answer is that actually we don't, because we can summarize it to the G by E means, and look, because the other aspects are going on within those. I think if you have replicates, it could be used in the analysis, but we've already summarized in the individual environments, if I've interpreted what my Dutch colleagues are doing correctly. I mean, we've got replicates in the sense that we've got a large number of genotypes, of course. So, it is a large matrix that we're looking at. And the other thing I could say is that if you have got additional variation resulting within those environments, that can be included too into the variance models, and that's just taken into account at the point which you fit the models, and you still do the screening for the part that's factor analytic or whatever else it might be. I mean, the factor analytic is a little bit like a random regression model, because you have got this multiplicative term involving the environments and also involving the genotypes. So, I mean, usually when we'd be modeling covariance matrices, we wouldn't be doing it in a random regression context. If you do the random regression in the standard repeated measurements way, the modelling of the variances or covariances is, if you like, a sort of side effect of what you're doing with the random regression. But factor analytic is looking at a multiplicative model involving the genotypes and the environment, so it's got that kind of idea in the background. Okay. You can remove those in the first stage. Well, you can involve those at the same time. So we're modeling the variance at this point, not the mean. So the mean part is being taken out, and if you want to model the mean part, that can be done. But it's the variance that we're modeling. So the modeling aspects of the environmental mean would be relevant when we start doing the scanning.